Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. It's AB Dawji, and of course, it's the big picture. How's it, eh? Well, you know what? It's great to be with you again. The big picture, the program that dissects the complex shenanigans that dominate the international stage. We lampoon the louts that masquerade as world leaders. We deliver a sharp kick and a few claps to the hypocrites and war criminals, and unpack the double dealings, subterfuge, intrigue, and corruption that permeate the higher echelons of power. Good heavens, it all sounds so profound, eh? So highfalutin. But stated simply, we take a hot knife and cut through the bull. So let's get cracking. And as usual, we look at the stories, the crazy stories that made it into the headlines. But let me get back to the story that I covered last week, Robert Mugabe. I've got some inside information about what transpired when the army, when the generals turned against him and his own party threw him out. The generals approached him at his family home and they said to him that he must resign immediately. That's when Grace Mugabe said very loudly, "Can we have an extension?" And everybody ran for their lives. Did you get that one, eh? Did you? Didn't have your badam dood this morning, right? Grace Mugabe and an extension, you know? No? Didn't get it yet? Shoo. You people are really slow today. Okay, here's it. Auntie Grace whacked some young lady for mucking about with her sons and she used an extension cord. But you know what? It still sticks in my throat that instead of putting him on trial for the many crimes that he committed, he and his government over 37 years, instead he was given a golden handshake. That for me and for many Zimbabweans is very hard to swallow. He's going to get around $10 million and he and his horrid fro and other members of his family will continue receiving the annual salaries with full medical and travel benefits. But the worst thing, is that he's been granted immunity from prosecution and protection for their vast business interests. Vast business interests. What a fantastic reward for a man who committed so many human rights abuses. Some would say that this was done in order to, well, move forward peacefully so that there is stability in the country. This is nonsense. You know, a compromise is only agreed to when there is a possibility that there could be civil strife, maybe civil war or something, some form of unrest or something like that. Some say that the ANC government compromised on many things with the government, with the previous apartheid government, so that there would be what is called a smooth transition of power from apartheid to full democracy. Let the whites keep some of their privileges, and I suppose that's where the term white monopoly capital term comes from. That's where it originated. No wholesale confrontation of white and perhaps even confiscation of white-owned land and so on. So, you get what I'm saying? This was done, as I said, so as not to rock the boat too much. Many people didn't like the compromise, but it was done to avoid a dangerous situation arising. Remember how so many packed up and left for Canada and Australia and so on, your connections also? People were afraid. Now, let's look at Zimbabwe. Well, it looked like the whole of Zimbabwe was happy that Mugabe was toppled. People were dancing in the streets. The military had taken over. Mugabe's party itself booted him out. So, I have to ask this. What kind of crisis were the generals, and in particular the head honcho, Emmerson Mnangagwa, What was he trying to avoid? What danger would there be if they put Mugabe under house arrest and took away all his privileges and of course his wife's also, and confiscated all their ill-begotten gains. Their properties and businesses worth millions of dollars. Or even worse, they should have, if they put him on trial. And the answer, what would have happened? And the answer is nothing. Nothing. Zero. In fact, perhaps people would actually support it, be happy, and celebrate it. So question number two. Why did they give him the $10 million and also immunity from prosecution and all of that? Because, dear Bayo Orbeno, it's all about rearranging the deck chairs. It's all just a game. A game. A smokescreen. The status quo remains. The more things change, the more they stay the same. You get it? No? Well, let me put it this way. They're all buddies. Mugabe is not president right now, but he suffers no loss of privilege. Mnangagwa is president. And what did he do on Thursday? He brought in his chomis, the generals from the army. Foreign minister is a general from the army. And also some politicians who were close to Mugabe. Everyone expected him to form some sort of coalition government, bring in members of the opposition, so that a balance is created, some sort of a unity government. So now it looks like one big fraud. The people were duped. Well, that's my view. You may differ with me, and that's fine. I really hope that I'm wrong for the sake of the people of Zimbabwe. They have been through hell. They deserve to get out of it. They had such big smiles as they danced in the streets just a few weeks ago. Freedom at last. Well, let me leave it there, dear people, and let's see how it all turns out. Pray for the people of Zimbabwe. And while you're at it, pray for South Africa. Are we going to get another Zuma? Is the state going to remain captured? Is corruption set to continue? And on the subject of corruption, let me change gears a little bit and go to the story that caught my eye. Most people believe that if you want to get anything done, you have to see right. You know the term, see right. Hey boss, you are speeding, eh? You are doing 143. I can give you a big fine, eh? You know, I can give you a big fine. Eh, but I'm hungry. So what do you say, eh? What do you say? And that, dear listeners, gets you an immediate spot fine of 50 rands or 20 rands or whatever you've got in your pocket for two-piece combo. Did you know that the average amount paid in bribes by South Africans has been worked out, has been calculated? No, seriously. You have figures, for example, showing what is the average earning of a South African citizen. You also have figures showing how much an average South African, or what on average a South African spends on bribes. Well, I thought it was a joke, but I came across an article that actually showed this. And guess what? Times are hard. Times are hard. We hear from time to time, for example, the average consumption of meat in a family has fallen by 6.5% in every household. Or that people in 2017 spent 3.72% less on cigarettes than in the previous year, and so on. Well, it seems that South Africans are also cutting down on what they pay in bribes. I came across this article with the headline, "Even Bribes Feel the Pinch." It says here, even corruption is suffering in the current economic climate, according to a survey by the Ethics Institute. It found the average bribe in South Africa decreased to 1,550 rands in 2017, and it's down from 2,200 rands last year and 2,005 rands in 2015. The figures were reported in the Institute's 2017 South African Citizens Bribery Survey. Woo! Most bribes were paid for traffic offenses, that's 39%, and for driver's licenses, 18%, to secure jobs, 14%, to receive public services, 8%, and to avoid criminal charges, 7%. The average bribe for a traffic offense was 205 rands, while the average bribe to secure a tender was 82,282 rands. Respondents said EFF leader Julius Malema was the most committed to busting corruption, followed by his DA counterpart, Musi Maimane. Malema got 18% of the vote of one in five participants, and Maimane scored 17%. No other leader got more than 10%. This is the first time that bribes for police matters and criminal charges are in the top five. Avoiding traffic offenses has been the most common type of bribe for 3 years in a row. That's what the researchers said. Wow. So there you are, folks. As the headline says, even bribes feel the pinch. Sorry, man. I got no money, for KFC for you. But here I got some nice peanut butter sandwiches my wife gave me for lunch. What you say? Okay, let me move on to a shocking story that I came across this morning. And it made me wonder. It made me wonder about how crazy the world is. Or should I say, I wonder about how idiotic some people in this world can be. Dear listeners, you can't beat this one. A first-class mampara, an ulu kapata, a muhu, all rolled into one. I got this news from K, which is a Muslim lobby group known as the Council on American Islamic Relations, which fights very hard against Islamophobia in the United States. Let the article speak for itself. Here is what it says. A substitute teacher in Pearland, Texas, called the police this week because she feared a six-year-old Muslim boy with Down syndrome was a terrorist. Did you get that? She called the police because she feared a six-year-old Muslim boy with Down syndrome was a terrorist. The TV station Fox 26 Houston reports that Mohammed Suleiman, the six-year-old son of Pearland resident Maher Suleiman, got into trouble at school after his elementary school teacher called the police and told them that the boy kept repeating the words Allah and the word boom. And Suleiman said of his son, the father says, and that his son, who was born with Down syndrome, chromosome 21, says, it's not true. He doesn't speak at all. The teacher's phone call to police prompted both a police investigation and a Child Protective Services investigation into the Suleiman family. And Mahar Suleiman says, the last three to four weeks have been the hardest of my life. My wife and kids were crying a few days ago, and I told them everything is fine. The Pearland Police Department says that it has concluded its investigation and has found no need to take further action, while the Child Protective Services Department says its investigation is going on. My only comment is that this idiot teacher should be declared a terrorist for causing so much of pain and stress on this simple family. She should be locked up. Send her to Guantanamo. Islamophobia is on the increase in the United States. Do you know who tweeted these words? fear of Muslims is rational. In other words, it's okay to be afraid of Muslims. Who said that? No, it wasn't Donald Trump. It was a fellow by the name of Michael Flynn. General Michael Flynn. He was the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency from 2012 to 2014, a top advisor to Barack Obama. And after that, he became the top national security advisor to Donald Trump when Trump was standing for elections the whole of last year. Trump said during the election period that torture should be used against terrorists. And he said something even worse, that families of terrorists should be killed. Families of terrorists should be killed. Michael Flynn was asked on an Al Jazeera program whether he supported Trump's view that the families of terrorists should be killed. And what was his answer? He says, well, it depends on the circumstances. Depend on the circumstances? Which means, well, you can do it sometimes, it's fine, it's okay. Sometimes you can't do it. Well, guess what? This rotten, anti-Muslim bigot is in the soup. Nice, hot Halim. In December last year, he met with the Russian ambassador and told him, don't worry too much about the sanctions that Obama imposed on Russia. Russia at that time was accused of interfering in the U.S. elections, and Flynn was security advisor to Trump, who was just elected president and was going to take over from Obama in January. So it was not allowed for an incoming member of the new administration to have any contact with the Russians. Flynn and many others in Trump's team were questioned under oath whether they met with the Russians. And Flynn denied it a few months ago. Yesterday, he pleaded guilty for lying to the FBI. He could face 5 years in jail, and I am so happy. And it looks like the noose is slowly tightening around Trump's neck. Lots of his advisors are facing big questions and even jail. But President Pagla himself takes the cake. Earlier this week, he retweeted three videos from a British right-wing anti-Muslim group known as Britain First. The Guardian newspaper says the videos, and I'm reading from the paper, that supposedly show a group of Muslims pushing a boy off a roof, another claim to show a Muslim destroying a statue of the Virgin Mary, and a third claim to show a Muslim immigrant hitting a Dutch boy on crutches. The credibility of the last video was immediately undermined when the Dutch embassy in the U.S. said the perpetrator of the violent act in the video was born and raised in the Netherlands. So he was born in Holland. This boy who Trump said is an immigrant. He's not an immigrant. Because Trump's got something about immigrants. You know, he wants to stop people coming into his country. Well, the whole world was shocked by Pagla sending out the videos. Even the British Prime Minister Theresa May spoke out, saying that it was wrong for Trump to tweet these horrible videos. Of course, our dear Donald won't duck any criticism. He hits right back. He said in response that Theresa May should mind her own business and check her own backyard, where she will find many terrorists. Sure. What a club, eh? What a club. The man has lost his marbles. That is, if he had any in the first place. A textbook case of someone who is BDD, Badam Dood Deprived, totally nuts. You know, some of you may think that I am too harsh on him. I shouldn't be saying that his lift doesn't go all the way to the top floor. Okay. So I'm not an expert on judging a person's mental state. So let's hear what a more qualified person has to say. Hear this. Following a series of reports that indicate Donald Trump is living in his own reality, psychiatrist Dr. Lance Dodds on Wednesday warned the president that the president is exhibiting signs of psychosis, calling him an extremely incapable, disordered, sick individual. Dodds was speaking with the TV channel MSNBC, and he was speaking to Lawrence O'Donnell regarding a deluge of bizarre claims reportedly being made by the president. The New York Times last week reported Trump has begun to express doubt that it was his voice on the tape known as Access Hollywood, in which the president can clearly be heard bragging about grabbing women by their unmentionables. Trump himself acknowledged and apologized for that tape last year. And listeners, guess what? Trump said a few days ago that the tape is a fake. Yes, it is him on the tape, but someone, he claims, edited the tape to put someone else's voice and words onto it. The psychiatrist says, when he goes back and denies reality, people have trouble understanding that. The simple explanation for it, which people don't want to hear, is that he is not in control of himself. This is what we say when somebody is becoming psychotic. So, the article says, so all of his delusional ideas come up, and when he is stressed in some way, and then he loses track of reality because it doesn't fit what he needs to believe. Dodge called Trump's deteriorating mental state an extremely dangerous thing for anybody, especially somebody who has been so wantonly unconcerned about the welfare of others and willing to do anything to promote himself. Psychiatrist says he is an enormous present danger to us from the standpoint of creating a nuclear war, and even from the standpoint of doing what he can to destroy democracy, as well as attacking ethnic groups the way he has done. The psychiatrist later told O'Donnell that once people understand that he is a very sick man, he is truly very sick. His delusional thoughts are not surprising. Well, there you have it, folks. I think the whole thing can be summed up in just one word: pagla. And therefore, this jungly hit back at his friend, the British Prime Minister. More of that after this break. Hey, that's the first time I heard that promo. I love it. And before the break, I was telling you about how Donald Trump told Theresa May that she must mind her own business and look into her own backyard to see terrorists there. You know, the Prime Minister always repeated that the United States and Britain had a special relationship. And, of course, you may remember that she was the first woman or the first world leader, to go over to the White House to meet Donald Trump when he became president. And actually, he was due to visit Britain in January or February next year, but now a White House spokesperson announced that, well, actually, there was no definite date, because he's quite busy at home, and maybe he'll go later in next year. And Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, released a statement saying that Trump is not welcome in his city. So I wonder if Trump will also not receive an invitation to that big wedding next year. Which brings me to the point, dear listeners. I want to warn you about a great danger that lies ahead. You are in danger of getting seriously brain damaged. What's it all about, I hear you ask? It's about the media. From now onwards, you will be getting more and more and more coverage of one particular news story. the forthcoming wedding of Prince Harry of England and the American actress Meghan Markle. They just got engaged. So you're going to get saturation coverage, interview after interview with the person who will be making the wedding dress, who will be, the question is, who will be the bridesmaid, who will be invited to the wedding, where will be the honeymoon, what will be on the menu at the reception, an interview with the chef, an interview with her former husband, interviews with all her friends. And you know what? It's already started. And it's making me quite bilious. Quite bilious. But you know what? There's a very important factor that has not been covered in the media. What does Queen Elizabeth think about all of this? And she never really expresses her views about family matters in public. But you know what? Her husband, Prince Philip, what's he, 96 years old now, eh? Duke of Edinburgh, that's what he's called, Prince Philip. The Queen's husband told me what the Queen is thinking. Here is what Prince Philip said.
Well, to be frank, old boy, there is an atmosphere of doom and gloom here at Buckingham Palace. The old girl is rather withdrawn, walking all over the palace, muttering to herself, a divorcee with a child, an actress, mixed race, she's mixed, she's colored. She's talking to herself the whole day, and even sometimes in her sleep, terribly disturbing. Actually, old boy, she hasn't spoken to me for a whole week. Not a word. Well, I suppose I should count that as a blessing. Hey, what? But you know what? She almost got a seizure. That's right, a seizure. When the news first came out. When she heard that Harry was getting married to this Merkel girl, she thought that it was Angela Merkel of Germany. Hey, if I didn't throw that glass of cold water on her face, we would have lost her. After what Charles brought into the palace, when he abandoned the delightful Diana, I suppose Angela would be an improvement. Hey, what? Good Lord, that's terribly cruel of me. Camilla and I got on quite well, actually. But what possessed Charles to trade Diana in for Camilla is beyond my comprehension. Doesn't make sense at all. And Queenie was quite perturbed that Diana went off with that Egyptian fellow. It frightened her that some tanned kids would come out of that relationship and Charles would be forced to invite them to the palace. After all, she was an ex-wife, you know. I saw that Queenie was a lot more relaxed after that relationship ended in Paris. What was that Egyptian fellow's name? Do you remember? Ah, yes. Yes, it's Dodi. I don't often remember names these days, but I'm reminded of Dodi because I had this vegetable a few times at my favorite restaurant in Oxford Street. Lovely stuff, but I can't take much of it because it makes me rather flatulent. So I'll be walking all round the palace, letting off steam, so to speak. The corgis begin to faint. You know, I love Dodi, the vegetable, not the Egyptian, although he's quite a likable chap. Well, he was anyway. I wonder what I will call Harry's girl. Maybe Karela. That's another vegetable. It was stuffed with mince. Very spicy indeed. Very spicy. No good for the good old piles, you know. I had something of a relapse. Well, I suppose we should accept Harry's choice. Stiff upper lip and all that, you know. This Megan girl looks quite cheery. Never mind the slight tan. And also that she is divorced with a kid. But I'm not sure if I can put up with that ghastly American accent. I really don't know how I would react if her kid came up to me and said, "How you doing, Grandpa? How you doing, Grandpa?" I'd probably whack him on the head with my newspaper. Good Lord, I'm just joking, old boy. But I'm really worried about the old girl, Queenie. It's all having a terrible effect on her. I'll tell her that this Merkel girl is related to Obama. That may perhaps help her, help to lift his spirits. Hey, what? And so, dear listeners, that's what's happening at Buckingham Palace. Right. We don't have much time, so let me move to another story. Something a little more serious. You know, I make no apologies for supporting the move from the South African government to pull out of the ICC, that is the International Criminal Court. Any law or court that is selective in its application is, in my view, not legitimate. The United States has not signed onto this court, but it can tell the UN Security Council to act against perpetrators of human rights abuses. And no one can take U.S. citizens to this court. So, question is this fair? And the chief prosecutor, Ocampo, who served for many years, he's a former prosecutor, he served for many years, had strong political links to the United States and Israel. So, he was clearly biased in who he will prosecute and who he won't. And the current prosecutor is also coming short. Here is the latest on that from the Israeli newspaper, the Jerusalem Post. This is what it says. The International Criminal Court prosecutor on Thursday shut the door permanently on war crimes allegations relating to the 2010 Mavi Marmara Flotilla. You remember that? This big ship loaded with activists was bringing humanitarian aid to the Gaza Strip when it was attacked in international waters by the Israeli Navy. The article says here, after years of attempting to go after top Israeli political and military officials in courts in Turkey, Europe, and before the ICC for the deaths of 10 activists killed by Israeli Navy commandos, the ICC prosecutor's decision to close the case effectively ends the last real threat of prosecution. The case has been controversial within the ICC system. In November, listen carefully now, in November 2014, ICC prosecutor Bensouda tried closing the file for the first time, saying that while the IDF's conduct in the incident seemed to her to display elements of war crimes, the 10 activists killed simply did not constitute a high enough body count to warrant her involvement, since she focuses only on mass killings. So what she says there is that there were not enough people killed, and therefore it doesn't qualify as a mass killing. Bensouda's November 2014 decision was meant to end her review of the Mavi Marmara raid
at a preliminary stage without ordering a full criminal investigation, let alone filing indictments, and was viewed by the pro-Israel side as a first ICC victory. So Israel was happy. She was about to close the whole thing right at the start. And the article says, but then the ICC pre-trial chamber voted on a 2-1 split, ruling against Bensouda over how to handle the flotilla raid, ordering her to open a full criminal investigation. Bensouda appealed to the ICC's top body, the appeals chamber, and got a mixed result in November 2015. In a razor-thin 3-2 vote against Bensouda's appeal, in other words, she lost the appeal, the ICC appeals chamber ordered her to review her conclusions a second time, looking at a wider array of available information, but allowed her to come to the same decision as long as she performed the review. 2 years later, Bensouda explained that after reviewing additional information, even as, in her words, there is a reasonable basis to believe that war crimes were committed by some members of the Israeli Defense Forces, no potential case arising from this situation can, legally speaking, be considered, in her words, of sufficient gravity. It's not so serious, in other words. Therefore, barring the opening of an investigation. Crucial to her decision was her finding that there was no reasonable basis to believe that the identified crimes were committed on a large scale or as part of a planned plan or policy. Whew, that really took my breath away. Well, there you are, folks. I'll say it again. I make no apologies for supporting South Africa's withdrawal from the ICC. Let me tell you this also, that the whole saga about charging Omar al-Bashir, not to say whether he was innocent or not, was a very carefully orchestrated plan to achieve a particular objective, to split Sudan into two. And, of course, as we know, it succeeded. It succeeded. That's a whole big story. Maybe I'll address it one day. So, my final comment is that it's very clear that the ICC is a weapon of Western imperialism and nothing less. Time for the thing that you've been waiting for, and that is light at the end of the tunnel. And I got nothing new for you today, just some recycled ones. I just took them out and put some dhania on it, took it out of the freezer, so I hope you forgot them. Right, I got two of them for you in the limited time. Chota Mota went to see his doctor, Dr. Jasat, and he said to the doctor, "Doctor, these days I can't manage to do some of the things that I used to do before at home, like putting the clothes into the washing basket and clearing up the table after supper and so on." Well, Dr. Jasat gave him a full checkup and said, "Chota Mota, there is nothing wrong with you." And Chota Mota said, "So, what's the problem, doctor?" The doctor replied, "Well, let me put it this way. I put in simple language. You are lazy." And Chota Mota said, "Okay, doctor, but can you please put that in one big, like a medical term, so that I can tell my wife?" You know, I don't... a thought just came into my mind. I just made something up. I think you should go to the doctor, all you bullies, and tell the doctor to give you a letter stating that you are suffering from symptomatic apoplexia. I don't know what that means, but I'm sure the fro will get all worried and alarmed and tell you to take it easy. Just sit in your chair and watch TV or something. Here's another one. Abdul is a big lani, but he's also a big kanjus. He's very tight with his money. At Ocean Basket, he will take all the toothpicks and put it into his pocket. When he stays at a hotel, he clears out all the shampoo and soap and all the tea bags and coffee and sugar that's in the room. Well, I'm sure you don't do that, eh, dear listeners? You never do that. Anyway, Abdul went to the dentist in Grey Street and he asked the dentist, "How much you charge for an extraction?" And the dentist said, 120 rands. And Abdul said, "Oof. Hey, that is so expensive, eh?"
you haven't got anything cheaper. And the dentist says, but that's normal, man. That's what we charge for an extraction, sir. And Abdul says, okay, doc, what if you don't use any anesthetic? And the dentist says, hey, well, that will be very unusual. But if that's what you want, I can do it for 90 rands. And Abdul says, what if you use one of your dental trainees and also no anesthetic? How much then? And the doctor says, well, I suppose it can be done, but it will be very painful. Okay, I will use a trainee and I can make it 50 rands. And Abdul says, okay, doc, what if you bring the students in, you know, medical students, and make it a student's training session so they can watch as the trainee extracts the tooth? The dentist says, ah, yes, okay, I suppose it can be good for the students. Okay, then I will charge you only 10 rands. And Abdul is very happy and he says, okay, doc, now you're talking, man, now you're talking. Can I confirm an appointment next Tuesday for my wife? This is Amy Dawji bidding you all. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.